Welcome to the Field Sales Leadership Guide podcast, where we discuss with experienced and successful sales leaders what works and what doesn't in the sales profession. Join us as we tap into high-performing sales leaders and their passion for field sales. We've lined up for you some of the smartest movers and shakers in sales leadership to share their formulas for success and the tricks of the trade. Join us as we pull back the curtain, giving you actionable insights and strategies that you can use with your sales team.
All right, welcome back for another session for the Field Sales Leadership Guide podcast. Thanks for joining us again. Special episode that quite embarrassingly is probably way long overdue. And why I say that, look, I'm a major fan, and I carry so much respect for the folks that not only come up with ideas based on needs that they see in the market or in the world, but to those that actually act on those ideas and problem identification. So those are the true entrepreneurs. They identify a problem and they immediately see the world differently through a different lens. So most folks see a problem, and if that problem impacts them, what do? They complain about it. I had a mentor years ago tell me, JT, do not be the guy in your personal life, in your professional life, with your friends, that points things out that need to be fixed unless you bring your tool belt with you to actually solve the problem. So that little bit of a level set, I've now worked with our founder and now chief strategy officer, Matthew Sniff, for 3 years. It's gone by really, really quickly. And I describe Matt this way. Have you ever started a conversation with someone and instantly knew that you had this feeling that, oh man, this person's way smarter than I? That's Matt Sniff to me. I always get nervous because I'm like, he's going to do some sort of big pontification with this big aha moment at any second. So a couple of things. Matt, I find you unbelievably analytical. Matt sees the world through data. And in order to gather that data, Matt asks fantastic questions. He's naturally curious and inquisitive, methodical. I see Matt, I see you as like this Rubik's Cube master, where Matt has the ability to create a series of recurring or repeating steps. And when they're continued, the puzzle is solved and the mission is accomplished. Lastly, I find you very kind, unbelievably enjoyable to work with and work for. So I love being on the team. Now with those three compliments, now come the zingers. So lastly, Matt, you might be the world's worst fantasy football player that I've ever played against or seen. Neglect is not even a term that would accurately quantify the mismanagement of your 2-11 team as we head into week 14. And then lastly, for any of the listeners out there, you'll know that over my right shoulder is my Pittsburgh beloved Steelers. Matt is a Cleveland Browns fan through and through, which makes me very sad to come on board 3 years ago. But he's proven that he can ever overcome those poor decisions. So, Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, JC. I'm excited to be here, and I agree, it's long overdue.
It is long overdue. So, I love Americans that identify problems, pull themselves up by the bootstraps, and go full bore at solving those problems. And before we get into what we're calling the founder story, and everybody has those, let's give the listeners just a little bit of background on Matthew Sniff. So some background intel first. How many siblings do you have?
Definitely an interesting question to ask. I'm one of six kids, so five other siblings, and I am the youngest of the group.
So. He's the youngest of the group. So, listeners, I don't know whether this has come up before, but my wife and I, Summer and I, have five boys, and it is absolutely sweet chaos. So it is actually very encouraging to me to see Matt as the youngest of six be incredibly successful. So, that's one of the reasons why I asked that. Just recently you got married to an awesome woman named Emily. When was the wedding? Was it October of last year?
Actually, it was 2 years ago now.
Two? So my gosh, it's fine.
Yeah, it was originally supposed to be three. That was 2020, though, so you can understand why we moved it out a year. But it's been 10 years together, though. So 2 years married, 10 years together, all in all.
That's awesome. And you guys live where?
We live in New York, in New York City. Been here for just between 5 and 6 years at this point, I think. You lived for 5 years down in the Triangle in Raleigh-Durham. And enjoyed my time there. But my wife is from the area. She grew up in Connecticut. And so, you know, here we are.
Awesome. All right. So we're going to start getting into 10 years ago with the founding of Map My Customers. Let's start with schooling. Where did you go?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in outside of Cleveland, Ohio, hence the Browns fan comment. I don't get to pick who, you know, I guess you could pick who you're going to follow, but that was kind of handed to me since I grew up there. Went to school in Virginia, William and Mary, you know, majored in geology, which is kind of a strange thing to say out loud. But the reason being is, you know, I'm very into weather. I actually, anyone who knows me really well, family and friends, you know, that's one of the things that they would say, you know, about me is, you know, Matt really likes the weather. I actually was a tornado chaser for a time and actually went out to the Great Plains and roamed around looking for tornadoes, believe it or not. So I did that, long time ago, almost 10 years ago now. And, you know, I grew up always just having a love for the weather. You know, so I stuck with that, you know, the earth sciences and kind of majored in the earth sciences, during university days. And then, also had an interest in building things. And I think that's kind of why I took to programming and software development. And so also, degree in, you know, in geology as well as in computer science. So, you know, really interested in, got really interested in entrepreneurship early on. So made my first iPhone app when I was 16. I'm in my 30s now, so you can do the math. It's been a while. And, you know, I think there was just always something really, really exciting about being able to build and grow something that people really love to use. And, you know, I think that bug, if you catch it, is really hard to squash, right? I think that's followed me around since a very young age, you know, since high school it's really something intoxicating and heady about being able to, you know, see people use something that you thought up and you built. And it doesn't have to be that I built it, but it just so happens that, you know, to act on those impulses, as you were calling out sort of earlier on, JT, you know, it helps, right? If you're able to kind of just like get started, you know, get off the ground by being able to build something on your own, right?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard the storm chaser story before. this is one of my, I shouldn't say favorites. It is a movie that if it is on TV, I will definitively stop channel surfing and watch in its entirety. It's Twister with Helen Hunt. I love that movie, and man, did I want to become Dorothy was the name of the apparatus that they made to measure the strength of the, was it an F5 tornado or whatever it is. And I love that movie. So I want to hear more stories about that. That's awesome. Okay. How did we get the bend towards Map My Customers specifically?
Yeah, that's a very good question as well. So when I started out my career post-university days, I actually, I was an engineer out in the Bay Area. I lived up there for about a year, and I came home for Thanksgiving. This was 2014, so this was, you know, 9 years ago now. And you know, I was sitting there with my dad, and you know, he is one of those guys who always has ideas as well. And some of them, you know, pluses are good. Some of them are bad in an objective way. But this one was interesting, right? This one was seemed like a real pain point. He basically asked for, you know, an application. You know, I was an iOS developer, very specifically. I was a mobile app developer. He had asked for an application to visualize his book of business. He's in the flooring industry, had 1,000 accounts across the Southeast and up the East Coast. and wanted to be able to, you know, understand which accounts held which displays, which accounts held which products, you know, where competitors are selling product next to accounts he had. You know, the classic use case of being able to like physically understand where you need to spend time in your territory. And that was something that he really hadn't experienced existing in today's shape and form, which is to say as an iPhone app or an Android app, a mobile app in general, since, you know, the days of Streets and Trips for Microsoft in the early 2000s, where that was the application you used if you weren't, if you were using anything at all, right? Maybe if you weren't on that, you were just looking at, you know, atlases and trying to map out your route on paper, right?
Yep. Yeah, I always find that so fascinating. There's so many men and women that have supported their families without any technology for years, and all of a sudden that is no longer going to be repeatable, scalable. When those reps sail off into the retirement sunset, there's going to be some unique changes to try to take over that revenue building territory that rep had built up over the years. All right. So Thanksgiving 2014, you're there. Did he give you an assignment? Like what was that conversation like? Like, was he like, help me, Streets and Trips is gone, I've got nothing.
He's a very convincing guy, right? He's a sales guy. So it was, he's been out in the field building relationships for 40 years, right? So he's closing in on retirement age, but, was basically like, listen, like what I would love for Christmas is for you to build something like this. And I took him up on the challenge and built a scrappy sort of prototype in a period of about a month or month and a half and showed it to him over Christmas. And he kind of urged me. I actually wasn't thinking to create a business. I had created businesses before this in university. I made a couple of different startups, and although none of them really worked out, you know, I had kind of that entrepreneurial bug to have the desire to want to do that again. I just didn't think it would be so soon, right? And so he urged me to put it on the App Store, and I did, the Apple App Store. And at the time, you know, the App Store is a pretty amazing place, I would say, in terms of being able to make something and just get people to find it. And so I put it on the App Store, and to kind of my surprise, people started like pretty much buying it from like the first month. Right. I mean, they were really into it, and it really grew from there. A lot of really quick iterations over the next year on, you know, feedback from customers and, you know, sort of aggregating these ideas that made sense to build and kind of pushing the product forward very quickly. And, you know, the snowball kind of started rolling down the hill at that point, JT. And so, you know, that's kind of how it all started.
Iterations from first deployment of MVP for your dad to where we are now. 10 years ago, would you have said, holy smokes, that's where we need to be? Or has this been like, just describe that process a little bit.
Yeah. I think as you go through time, right, you realize that, you have to be decisive with where your business is going and what your business is really solving. And I think what we've uncovered is, we have a product that could be used by any rep, right? Even if it's just, you know, an individual sales rep, but a lot of really what we want to solve to impact the industry and kind of bring innovation to an industry that kind of desperately needs it, in my opinion, a lot of folks could really be more efficient if they were moved off of pen and paper and off of some of these older systems. It really was with the bigger teams, right? These outside sales teams that are 1, 2, 3, 500, 1,000 sales reps, sometimes even more. These are the teams that really need process. These are the teams that need to know what a good playbook looks like. And a lot of them, you would be so surprised. I mean, maybe you wouldn't be surprised at this point, but I'm certain a lot of people would be looking, you know, from outside the industry. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of process standardization missing. And, you know, part of the thrill about being an outside sales rep and on an outside sales team is it's the classic carry a bag, you know, scenario, right? It's like, you know, the movie from the early 90s, you probably know what I'm referring to,
Tommy Boy?
What is it? I think, right? It's autonomy to do your job. and know that you're good at it and get to travel around. I mean, that's the sales kind of mentality that a lot of these folks we work with have, which is, you know, we don't put that at risk with what we're doing, but, you know, I digress a little bit. There is something to be said for marching in the same direction the bigger you get as a team. And that brings with it a sense of consistency, better ability to forecast, and feel like there's an impact being made on the way that you go about selling. So I long story short, we saw, you know, a need early on for individual reps. It's kind of grown into a need for bigger teams. And as you begin to shift your strategy from small to big, obviously has implications on what you build and how you build it, right? So you go from an application that is, you know, kind of like simple and very easy to get started with, and but doesn't have a lot of features that a bigger team would need, like being able to manage different roles and different, you know, permissions and stuff like this. And so that's really the difference, is you start to need to build more, you know, sort of functionality that reflects the way that these teams actually organize themselves and operate. And, you know, a big team doesn't organize themselves in the same way that, you know, a team of just a few reps does, of course, right?
I always look back at this and I always wonder, like, what it's like with Matt and Emily around the dinner table. If Matt ever kind of just finally shows some energy of like, I did that, like, not like an NFL wide receiver dancing after they score a touchdown, but like, do you ever just sit back and go, we just stole a huge team from Salesforce, from Dynamics. They're leaving these gigantic, internationally built platforms for what Matt Sniff built and envisioned. Due to ease of use, due to value specifically built for the outside rep because of your vision. Do you ever just like step back and go, bam, let me spike the ball for a moment?
Well, first, we don't have a dinner table because we live in New York and there's no space for one, right? So we eat dinner on the ground in front of the TV on a coffee table. But, you know, I wish I was joking about that. But, you know, I think there's different founder personalities, right? So, you know, from my perspective, do I do that sort of thing? No, not really. But I mean, it does internalize, right? Like, it is obviously, that's what you do it all for. I think like there's a saying out there, and I don't know who said it the first time, but, you know, for the 80 to 90% of the time that being entrepreneurial, you know, and whether your startup is 1,000 people or one person still, you know, for the 90% of the time that it's really a fight every day and a battle every week, you know, that you're waging, you know, like the 10% of the time that all the good things happen makes it all worth it. And that's the situation where you, you know, steal a big account, you grow a team, you see success stories, like, you know, oh, we used Matt, my customers to, you know, see two more, even three more customers a week per rep. I mean, on a team of 100 or 300 people, that's a big, big, big impact. So it's really cool to see something that you've built, of course, be, you know, really appreciated, right? And then, you know, there's the opposite situation where, like, you know, the other way to look at it is like it gets more burdensome as the company and the product become more successful. Like, you feel a constant need to the need to prove yourself and to level up to the next step. Of course, you know, and this might just be, you know, classic American, you know, entrepreneurial dilemma, but like that need to kind of get to that next step never goes away, right? So it's kind of like in sales, right? You're always trying to outdo yourself. You're always trying to have your best year yet ever. And, you know, the reality is you can't have your best year ever every year, but you're always trying to get, you know, you're always trying to improve, right?
So I always, I look at you as kind of my intro. I think I called you the Rubik's Cube Master. I don't know where I got that. My 9-year-old can rock a Rubik's Cube, but it's a series of repeatable steps. And one of the things that I've just always appreciated about you is you keep your eyes on that prize with a series of repeatable steps of customer engagement research, customer interviews, you and your team always stay really close to the customers. And I value it. I respect it. And ultimately, it delivers all the value that our customers need. And quite selfishly, helps my customers be very successful. So keep doing that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's nothing more motivating than people knowing, especially the whole team knowing what the strategy is. And if you think about it from the people who are building the product or engineering team, knowing that what they're building, it makes sense and they know why they're building it and it matters, right? I mean, like it seems so simple, but good leadership oftentimes is you know, and this is not my sort of, you know, I did not come up with this, but you know, it's kind of simplifying things for folks and making sure you're clear on like why we're going in this direction and then explaining why we're going in that direction, right? And oftentimes a lot of teams will just build on a founder's whim because the founder thinks this is the right direction to go. I think, you know, what I appreciate with our team is, you know, we have a small product team and a pretty large engineering team. And so that keeps us pretty, you know, nimble, right? With a few product people and a boatload of engineers, we're able to turn the boat pretty quickly and be able to like, you know, kind of like make decisions and keep ourselves pretty agile with what we're building based on customer needs and, you know, feedback from what we're hearing, of course, right?
Yeah, it's always fun for me. Like, as you know, I get to do a lot of ride-alongs. And so I get to see outside sales reps' initial reactions to leveraging Map My Customers in the palm of their hand with their phone, mobile first, and then have them audibly compare what their day was like to what their day can be. And I just applaud it. I love the ingenuity. I love the forward thinking, and I'm proud to work with you. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I like working with you too. So yeah. Mutual.
We got the mush fest out of the way there. So look, thank you for the story. Thank you for the listeners to listening to the founder story. Follow Matt on LinkedIn. Connect with me on LinkedIn if you haven't done so already. We'd love to continue to engage with you and certainly help how we can. So go make it a great day, guys. Thanks a bunch.